Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. As always, I'm Mark Warner, along with Chris Lisa, writer for Last Word on Sports, and also the Hockey Writers Islanders contributor over at thehockeywriters.com. Chris, good day to you, sir. We've got a lot to cover and a little bit of time to get to it.
Absolutely. Let's jump right in it, because we got three big guests on this show.
Yep.
Segment one, me and you, and then after that, we have David Tolles in segment two. Talk about the Hawks, and Matt Pryor in segment three. Talk about the Panthers and the Stars, and JD Styles wraps it up in segment four. Talk about the Kings, all the different deals. So, so where do you want to start, Mark? Segment one. You want to start with Eric Stoll?
Yeah. Well, let's go into some of the trades that we're not going to talk about later on in the show. And I guess the biggest piece in that puzzle is Eric Stoll does get moved at the deadline to the New York Rangers. I don't know if the analysts or I misheard or what, but they said they were going to move him, play a little wing, play a little center. I kind of watched the first game, and he was definitely playing center and looked really good for the Rangers. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Eric Stoll, is he the impact player he was 4 or 5 years ago? No, but he is a very good player. You know, leadership with experience. And look, the teams are so close throughout the NHL, you know, other than the top couple. You put anyone in the series, it's a flip of a coin. So adding another good player, granted it came at a pretty good expense. I'm not going to get too much into detail, but they gave up a pretty good kid, from my understanding, the prospect in the deal, and 2 second-round picks. So now the next 2 years, the Rangers only have one pick in the first 2 rounds, and they have a very thin farm system. So, but their window is now, and I'm sure how they viewed it. And you know, we'll see how the puck bounces for them. I think this is a pure rental for them. I don't see how he'll be able to re-sign there with their cap situation.
That was going to be my question. Do you think they'll move some pieces there at the draft in order to make cap room and keep him on? And does that depend?
If they
on
do, they're
they
going to have to move someone like a Chris Kreider kind of situation. You know, but like I said, I mean, their focus is the here and now. The Rangers are in a time and place where it's about winning cups. They've come very close the last few years, obviously losing to Tampa last year in the Eastern Conference Finals, losing to the Kings in the Cup Finals. Before that, losing to the Devils in the Eastern Conference Finals, so just in the last few years. And Henrik Lundqvist, as we are doing this podcast, turns 34 today, so you have to wonder how many elite years does he have left, especially with the amount of games logged. So it's about the here and now for them, and we'll see. I mean, I would say clearly Washington's the team to beat in the East, and I would say Tampa's probably second. So I think the Rangers after that, but they'll be in the mix. I mean, they'll be a team, they'll be a threat.
So you right now, you'd put the Rangers as maybe your third favorite going into the playoffs if things stay the same the way they are?
I think you would, simply out of respect in terms of the goaltending and the level play Lundqvist gives you and the experience factor. But having said that, if you told me that the Rangers were going to play the Bruins in a 7-game series, I would say, well, buckle up. It's going to go 7. And I might like the Rangers a little bit more, or depending upon who has home ice, you know, or, you know, if we get a Ranger Islander first round series, same kind of thing. So, I firmly believe, outside of really Washington being in a series, for most of the teams in the East, I really do feel like it would be a flip of a coin, no matter how the matchups came to be.
So you mentioned Boston. They did, excuse me. They did acquire Lee Stempniak at the deadline, who I really like, and he had a solid playoffs last year. I think he kind of fits in pretty well. That might be one of the moves under the radar that actually might pay some dividends for the Bruins. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good support depth deal. I believe, of course, it's a 3rd-round pick, so you're not mortgaging the future. They picked up someone else from Carolina. There were so many of those little deals. It's escaping me now. forget who it was now. But they added a couple of support players. They didn't trade Louis Erickson, which is the smart move. I think the Bruins' philosophy was basically, unless someone gives us, you know, a huge package for Erickson, which no one was going to do for Leno, they want to keep him, and they had to keep him. I mean, they're right in the, like I said, they're right in the mix of things. So, it would have been shame on them if they would have traded, even if they got a great future package for Louis Erickson. They made those deals in the offseason. They got plenty to fill the cupboard up between the Milan Lucic deal and, the Dougie Hamilton deal. So, and they have two first round picks in this draft. So, they're well healed going forward.
Yeah, their best move might have been not trading Louis Erickson.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes addition by subtraction isn't the way to go. So that, I mean, he is the second leading scorer on that club. And when we had the Boston contributor on, the one thing you don't think about with the Bruins is their power play, and they've been top five power play all year long, and a lot of that has to do with Louis Erickson being on the club. So probably I agree with you 100% that keeping him around, even if you lose him at the end of the year, going to get into the playoffs. And I think if goalies get hot, you can ride that hot hand in the style they play. I don't think anybody's going to get away from the Bruins in the playoffs. I don't look anybody to be a short series going up against them. And adding a Lee Stempniak as just thickens up the backside there a little bit. I actually like that trade a lot.
I really did like what the Ducks did. I felt like picking up J.B. McGinn and Brandon Prairie. Again, two guys, they're not superstars by any means, but one of the things that probably one of the biggest weakness about the Ducks is their secondary scoring. So they added a couple of players. I mean, Prairie's currently hurt, but he's supposed to be back before the end of the regular season. And those two guys can help them in terms of secondary scoring. And all they gave up was a third-round pick and a sixth-round pick. So they didn't mortgage the future to get those guys. So I thought Eric Stoll would have been a good fit for them. But I think when you look at, in terms of value, they did very well. It wasn't a very sexy trade, but I think they can be an effective one.
Yeah, I agree. That is the caveat when... I mean, their scoring has definitely picked up lately. Their last seven games, I think, they're averaging about 5.5 goals a game. They blasted 4 in against the Kings on Sunday, too. So that's a hard team to score goals against. Corey Perry with a hat trick there. So adding they averaged under 2 goals a game for a very large part of the season. So adding a couple depth scorers is... definitely makes Anaheim a little more scary. They're charging hard. I think there's something stupid like 17-4 or something like there's something crazy since the second week of January. It's ridiculous how hard they're charging and how good they're playing right now. So putting a couple depth guys there definitely helps them. What is that? I mean, we'll get into the Blackhawks here when David joins us in the next segment.
I guess the last big deal would be Michael Boddicker. I was a little bit, Mikhail Boddicker, I was a little surprised. I mean, again, with prospects, you have to be careful. They got a couple of prospects in Alex Tanguay in terms of the salary cap maneuverability. But, I mean, the prospects that they got are kind of mid-level, you know, former fairly highly drafted prospects who are kind of mid-level prospects, and sometimes those guys, you know, it clicks and they become really good players, and sometimes it just doesn't happen more often than not. I thought they would have gotten more for Boddicker, to be honest with you.
He did have a great start to the season, and I remember talking with you about it. I was really high on him, and I was hoping that he could stay in Arizona, but he made it clear, I guess, that he didn't want to be there. I guess when you do that, the player has all the leverage at that point, and he has not scored in, I think, 22 or 24 games or something crazy like that. Well, so he came out as blazing hot, and I really liked him there in Arizona. But as he has gone down, they have also gone down in the standings, unable to sustain. They stayed up there for quite a bit. I was really impressed with how they were playing early in the season, and with Domi and Duclair and a couple of the other young guys they have. Boddicker was having a great start to the season, so maybe he'll get kick-started when he gets into the Avs. And, I mean, you know, you're trading a UFA who doesn't want to be there. Once that becomes known, you're pretty much at the mercy of what the other teams think the price should be. So picked up a couple prospects. Like you said, mid-level guys, they might come up and do some third-line duty, right?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Like I said, it's not like they've set the world on fire, but they're young, and you know, at that point, you got to move them and get the best deal that you feel you can get. So obviously, I'm sure there was interest. I know the Islanders were interested in him, but they didn't have a second-round pick in this year's draft. Just going to the Bruins, the Johnny Boychuk, to finalize the Johnny Boychuk trade. But, obviously they thought that was the best deal on the table, so they took it.
Yeah. Too bad he couldn't stay in Arizona, but you know what? I'm a firm believer that if you don't want to be here, I'll show you the door myself. So,
yeah, what I heard, and I got this from Matt Pryor, we'll have on later, is he was just, I don't think it was anti-Arizona. I think all the uncertainty moving forward of the team, you know, team staying in Arizona, where are they going to play in Arizona? And I think he, in a perfect world, and since he had the choice, go someplace where we didn't have to worry about that. That is my understanding of why he was he wasn't looking to re-sign there.
Right, and that's understandable too. But since we're talking Avs, I know I asked you before if you had saw the game and you didn't really get to catch any of it, but I gotta say, watching the alumni game for the outdoor game there in Colorado between Wings Avs brought me back right to the heart of the battle there in the late 90s. Just about everybody was back. Patrick Waugh played great. Chelios slew-footed, and I forgot who he caught like that, but he stood up at the blue line, gave him a solid slew foot, spun him around, and then gave him a slash across the wrist, and then, of course, skated directly over to the bench and jumped on the bench in true Chelios fashion. So there's a little chippier than you would think in an outdoor game. But going back to those playoff battles they had, I mean, just stupid good hockey back then. That was fantastic. It was
absolutely.
It was fun.
Big rivalry.
I think they said, what did they say? 16 Hall of Famers excuse me, 12 Hall of Famers and 16 Norris Trophies and more Stanley Cups than anybody could add up were on the ice there. And a lot of them could still skate and play a little bit. Sackett came down the left side and just wristed a bullet from the left circle. You know, goalie never even moved. I forget who was in net. They were kind of changing, you know, changing goalies in and out period by period. But Sakic had a couple nice plays. Ricci was out there. Bork was out there. Pretty cool game to watch just as far as all of the outdoor alumni games go. Pretty fun. So we're going to wrap this segment up. And we'll be talking Blackhawks hockey trade deadline when we come back from the break. Thanks for listening. Hello, hockey fans, and thanks for listening to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Make sure you check out all our episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, and HockeyTalkRadio.us, the Internet's first 24-hour-day, 7-day-a-week, all Hockey Talk radio format streaming station. Check it out. All right, hockey fans, welcome back to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're going to bring in our first guest of the show. Been on the show before, talking Blackhawks hockey, David Tews. He writes for the Hockey Writers. You can follow him on Twitter at DavidTews13. That's David, T-E-W-S, 13. For all the Blackhawk fans that did listen to that show, we had a great response on that show, David, by the way. We appreciate you coming back and helping us go through this trade deadline thing. We kind of touched on it before, and I'm not any kind of a guru at this or anything, but we did talk about Ladd and the teams that he might end up on, and we did say that what the Blackhawks want, the Blackhawks get. So just to start off the trade talk, where is Andrew Ladd slotting in on the lines there? And I know he's, I think he's played two games now. How's he looked with the team?
Yeah, so thanks for having me. How are you doing, guys?
For sure.
It's a pleasure to be back, of course. But, yeah, I was super pumped about the Ladd deal. Gave up quite a bit to get him, but I think he was probably the best player traded at the deadline this year. So it was definitely a good haul. He's sliding in on the top line, playing the left wing next to Jonathan Toews and right now Andrew Shaw.
That's what I thought. That's a good line.
Absolutely. But Marian Hossa is expected to take over that top right wing spot again once he gets once he comes back from injury. So that should be a very potent line. You got Ladd, Toews, and Hossa up front. Pretty excited to see that come together.
Absolutely.
And as for how he's looked in his first two games, I can't really complain too much. He's been pretty good. You know what you're going to get with Andrew Ladd, and so far in that game against the Capitals, he's delivered. He had that one assist. But he plays well all over the ice. He plays defense. He can scrum along the boards and get the loose pucks for Toews. And he's pretty good offensively too. So he's fit in very well so far.
I guess I don't need to tell you that, adding even more leadership to that locker room in trading for a captain.
Absolutely.
I guess he knows I'm sure he'll fit in the room. That's absolutely not a concern with that kind of player. And that's one of the reasons I thought that he was a fit for the Kings, too, is that he does play that 200-foot game. And he doesn't mind, like you said, going and getting the puck, getting in the corners and doing what he does. And his leadership abilities are, you know, captain of a team. You can't do much better than that. So when Hossa comes back, and that's going to slide Shaw down probably to third, because I know you're not touching that second line. So is that is that where Fleischman is going to is he going to skate on that third line, and then Dale Weiss back down on the fourth line, or how are the other two players you guys got working in?
Yeah, it's tough to say yet. I know Teravainen's going to be playing somewhere on that third line. He's been extremely valuable for the Hawks so far this season, so I don't think he was going to risk taking away any of his ice time and moving him down to the fourth line.
Right.
But another guy to keep an eye on is Andrew DeHarden. He's played very well this season, and he's played a lot of minutes on the third line. So it might be interesting if Q ends up going with Teravainen, DeHarden, and Fleischman on the third line, and then loading up on the fourth line with Weiss and Shaw and Rasmussen. I mean, that's a lot of guys, a lot of very talented players sticking on a fourth line, especially when you have DeHarden, who's typically a fourth-line guy anyway. But I don't know too many teams that can skate with four lines like that up front.
No, there's really not that many.
Yeah.
Oh, you're killing me with that, too, by the way. But the wealth of riches in Chicago continues. I know Chris wanted to talk about some of the pieces and parts that the Blackhawks had to give up to land the players that they did. So, Chris, why don't you jump in and go through what I talked about what they got. Let's talk about what they gave up a little bit.
Yeah, real quick note, though. A couple of days before the Ladd trade, me and Matt Pryor were talking, and we felt the Hawks were going to get Ladd, and we predicted, we said, you think they give up their first of Marco Dano? So we constructed that deal. The GMs just stole the credit from us. But maybe you can talk a little bit about Dano, and it seems like Montreal got a, even though it makes sense for the Hawks, got a really nice piece in Philip Dano. So maybe you could talk about the two kids and that they gave up in these deals.
Yeah, definitely. So Marco Dano was one of the top players we got in the Hawks got in the Brandon Saad deal, and he was projected to make the roster this season after putting up quite a few points with Columbus last year, but he just didn't really fit Quinville's system. He's a very talented player, no doubt, but he has a hard time skating with guys like Toews and Kane up front sometimes. He's not as quick. So I think it was just more a lack of long-term fit with him in terms of moving him for Ladd. But
Philip Deneau is a pretty valuable player, in my opinion. He was playing third line minutes for the Hawks pretty much the entire time that he was up from Rockford. He fit in perfectly. He can play in almost any situation. I think he has pretty underrated hands for a guy that's known as more of a low-ceiling, leadership, grinding type of player. So he can play offensively, too. And his defense is his best asset. He can be a lockdown center in this league for a long time. And I think Montreal is really, they got a very good player in exchange for Weiss and Fleischmann, two guys that they weren't going to be able to re-sign anyway. So good deal for Montreal.
Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, what I've read about Dano is everyone feels very confident that he is either going to be a terrific third-line player, and it seems like his ceiling is, can he score enough to be considered a second-line player? But he'll be a very good player. It's just a question of where does he fall? Does he fall on the third line or does he fall on the second line?
Yeah, definitely. He probably fits more on the third line, especially in Montreal. They do have a pretty deep set of forwards, so he can...
You mean Winnipeg?
Marco Dano. Yeah. I would agree with that as well. I think they're both pretty similar in that aspect. I see Dano as more of a low-end top six forward down the road. But it all depends on how he fits in the locker room, like which guys they play him with. But yeah, Winnipeg has a deep forward core as well. It's going to be tough for him to break, the top six consistently.
Now, let me ask you this, and I don't know. I think I'm right, but wasn't Marco Dano the Blackhawks property, and then he was moved to Columbus, and they thought highly enough of him to insist on him coming back in the Brandon Saad deal? Is that correct?
No, he was a pick of the Blue Jackets.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he went in the first round.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was another piece that was a Blackhawks.
Yeah. You're right, Mo. There was another piece where the Blackhawks got back. Dano was, I want to say it was the 2013 draft. He was the 27th overall pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so I guess out of all the pieces moved, and we talked a little bit in the first segment, me and Chris, and I agree with you saying that Ladd's probably got the most left in the tank and also one of the better fits that move. Just to get your take on what Eric Staal is going to mean to the Rangers. Other than that, most of the players that moved around at the deadline were kind of role player types. What do you think Staal does for the Rangers?
I think Staal's going to be a great fit on the Rangers. Right now they have him playing, I believe he started in the third line, am I right?
I think so, yeah.
Game.
I did
get
to watch some of that, so for sure.
Yeah, so alleviating some of the pressure on him, I think it's going to allow him to thrive a little bit more. And New York has some pretty talented guys up front. I think if he meshes well with Kreider, then that could be a very dangerous combination in the playoffs. And he's got the pedigree. You don't need a pedigree better than Eric Staal's in terms of the 100-point season and the Stanley Cup. And, he's captain forever. But he's an impressive player.
So I think those are probably the two biggest pieces to move around. Long term, the depth that, and we know Ladd's going to skate first line, so I was kind of scared of the Taves-Ladd combination, and especially if you throw Hossa in there, why not? At least the top six is either as scary or scarier to come up against in the Western Conference than even some of the Cup teams, maybe. Where does that, in your mind, put the Blackhawks as the favorite going forward in the West?
I think when you look at what they gave up, I don't think they can be anything other than the favorite. I think the expectation now that management invested all those assets to go out and improve the team so much, I think the locker room is pretty dead set on winning it all this year. And I would be shocked, actually, if they didn't make it to at least the conference finals.
No, I agree. Before the deadline, I was thinking the Ducks were charging, but it was still a, Kings Blackhawks conference final again.
Absolutely.
excuse me, and I still think that might be the conference final. We were talking a little bit. The Ducks did add a couple nice depth forwards that may address their secondary scoring issues, which they're still dealing with, but they've been on fire. I mean, there's no question about it. They've got the best record in the conference since like the middle of January. They're ridiculous right now. But yeah. I still thought it would be a Blackhawks Western Conference final, and still do. But I think I got to give the Blackhawks the nod as the favorites in that series for sure. That's that's ridiculous. And
well, if they do match up, Corey Crawford has
been playing great all year. We talked little bit that in that kind of a matchup, you're looking at goaltending maybe being the deciding factor in that. But now you guys got so much deeper at forward that. And your defense has been solid all year too. So kudos to the Hawks, man. I gotta say, get a little bit more worried playing with those guys. Whew.
Yeah, hats off to Stan Bowman once again.
Yeah, for sure. He's done a phenomenal job. There's no question about it. Rebuilding, retooling, managing his cap, plugging players in, bringing up, you know, the scouting department there. You can't say a bad word about the Blackhawks organization. They look and you could look at the East and whatever, but the teams that proved they could do it the last 6 years are the Kings and the Hawks, and I got to give the edge back to the Hawks on this one. Kings did a little bit at the deadline, but I don't think they can match the Hawks. It's going to be a good series again, but you got to say Blackhawks maybe. I'm trying to think of who I like in the East. I guess I'm not ready to pick that one yet, but I guess I got to say Hawks are going to the finals. I mean, what do you think, Chris? I know you're. Ducks. See.
Well, we'll see. You know, injuries obviously is a big factor too. That's like
for sure.
You know, and a lot of these games are one goal games. So, and who has the hot goalie? But obviously, you know, the Hawks are, in my opinion, the favorite in the West. But I wouldn't sleep on the Ducks or the Kings. So.
No, the one thing you did mention injuries, and if things go the way they're going, it'll be the Kings-Ducks second round, so that'll be a brutal series, and either one of those two teams could drop a man or two heading out to Chicago, assuming they get to the Western Conference Final, but yeah, powerhouse gets stronger. They had a great deadline, so... when we do get into the playoffs, Dave, we're going to call you up. We'll do a little playoff preview, when we get into the second round matchups and things are a little bit less hectic. We'll get back in touch with you and we'll maybe preview their second round matchup with you for a few minutes. If you could come back on the show again, that'd be great, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it already.
Yeah, let the playoffs start. I'm ready. Chris, you got anything else, man?
That's it. Dave, thanks again for being on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
All right. I'm sure you'll have an article up about the trade. Do you have anything up on the Hockey Writers yet about the trade deadline, or are you working on that?
I wasn't one of the people covering the trade deadline, but I did make a recommendation for the Hawks to acquire Ladd the morning before the trade happened. So okay. If you want to see my insights behind what went down before it went down, definitely check that out.
Okay, cool. And that you can find his links to his content at David2s13. That's TEWS, David2s13 on Twitter. And you can also look him up on The Hockey Writer. So thanks for coming on, man. We got to get off to our next segment, so we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks, man. Hello, hockey fans, and thanks for listening to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Make sure you check out all our episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, and HockeyTalkRadio.us, the Internet's first 24-hour-day, 7-day-a-week, all-hockey talk radio format streaming station. Check it out. All right, we're back. Joining us now, third or fourth time he's been, good friend of the show, Matt Pryor covers the Panthers and the Dallas Stars for the Hockey Writers, and you can always find his content at BigTex26 on Twitter. Before we get started, we were just wondering, what's the 1926 for?
That is for the year the New York Rangers entered the NHL.
Okay.
Yes, because I'm writing a biography of Tex Rickard, the founder of the Rangers.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
And is that also anyway, the Big Tex reference then, too?
Big Tex is kind of a dual meaning. It does reference Tex Rickard, but also here in Dallas at the State Fair of Texas, there's this giant cowboy who talks to visitors, and his name is Big Tex.
Okay. So you got a dual meaning on the Big Tex, and the 1926 is the birth of the Rangers. That's cool. I like that.
Depends on your perspective.
Well, let's get right into it. The Panthers, one of the busiest teams at the deadline, acquiring three players. I'm going to say Jakob Kindle first because that's the guy I keep forgetting when we're doing our show prep. But also bringing Teddy Purcell down back to Florida. And now the other ones, I just...
Yuri
Hudler. Thank you, Chris. So just right off the bat, I'm sure you've seen where they've slotted in on with the current lines, and what do you think that fit means to the Panthers going forward?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. I watched the game last night, and they had Hudler on the first line with Barkov and Yager because Huberdeau is still out. So when Huberdeau comes back, he's going to, my guess is, drop down to the third line, which is currently Kyle Rau, Nick Bjugstad, and Teddy Purcell. And Rau will go back down to Portland. But last night, I thought both new guys looked good. Purcell had, he was working the point on the power play. They had him out there with Brian Campbell on the point, and Purcell had an assist on the power play, so can't complain there. Hudler played just under 14 minutes, which at first I thought was a little bit interesting, but then I saw Yager played just over 14 minutes. So basically he was out there whenever Yager was. And I think they're both going to be good fits for the team. One of the issues, probably the biggest issue Florida has had, has been puck possession. And I think both Hudler and Purcell are going to help with that. Purcell in particular, his even strength Corsi 4 percentage with Edmonton was 52.24, which would have put him, had he been with Florida the whole time, it would have put him at the top of the list, because only two of Florida's forwards, Jokinen and Riley Smith, have a Corsi, even strength Corsi, above 50 right now. So I think it makes them a better team. These acquisitions make Florida a better team, and I think they are ready to make some noise, not just make the playoffs, which they're in already, but as Matt Larkin of the Hockey News wrote the other day, it's not a great stretch of the imagination to see them in the Eastern Conference Final.
I kind of agree with that. If depends on how they match up, and there's a lot to be decided still in the East. I think there's still seven or eight teams within 5 or 6 points of each other, I think, as you get down through it. So, I mean, there's still a lot to be decided, and matchups are, I think, maybe more important to the Panthers than some of the other teams, just being the experience factor of not being in the playoffs. I think for them to get through the first round, I think they need to have a pretty solid, a really favorable matchup for them. But I think after they get through the jitters or whatever you want to call it, learning playoff hockey a little bit, then I could definitely see Luongo and the boys going deep into the playoffs. We talked last time, and I asked you to give me a prediction on where they were headed, and you said you thought that they would win a round and be very competitive in the second round. And these trades sounds to me like these trades put you right, in your mind right out of the second round.
Yes, I would say without question, because these veteran acquisitions of Hudler and Purcell, this is such a huge upgrade over a couple years ago when you had Scotty Upshaw and Brad Boys. I think they were great moves, and all the Panthers gave up was draft picks, and didn't even have to give up a first round pick. And especially you look at the standings right now. If the playoffs began today, Florida would play Detroit in the first round. And I watched the Red Wings against the Stars the other night, and yes, the Red Wings won, but as I was watching them, I was thinking, these are not the invincible Red Wings of the 90s and the early aughts.
No.
These guys are beatable. And I think Florida would beat them in a 7-game series.
That was without Dylan Larkin, though, right?
Oh, no, even with Larkin.
He didn't play in that game, though, right?
No, he did.
Did he?
He did play against Dallas.
Okay. Yeah. I thought he was still out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, it was his first game back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Matt, you're saying you have the Panthers and the Islanders in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's your prediction?
that's half my prediction.
Well, it's better than being half right is half wrong, right? Is that what they say?
Gosh, something like that, I'm sure. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's. We got a few minutes left. Let's. I guess the general consensus on the Chris Russell deal is that the Dallas way overpaid for a really depth defenseman who's he's a stay at home guy. He's not the best skater. He's I don't know where he's sliding. Is he third pair or second pair?
They used him on the third pair last night.
Is that a lot to give up for a third pair guy?
Oh, that
with a UFA at the end of the year.
The short answer is yes. That is a lot to give up, and you look at comments online from Flames fans, and they're ecstatic about the deal, which is a surefire sign that the Stars overpaid. But I'm inclined to give Jim Neal the benefit of the doubt after all of the deals he's pulled off the last few years. What will be interesting going forward is exactly how Russell was used. Last night he played just over 18 minutes, including almost 3 minutes on the penalty kill.
Right.
They definitely need someone who can block shots. Russell's your man for that, definitely. What's curious to me is that Lindy Ruff was talking before the game last night about perhaps going with a 5-man rotation on defense.
Hmm.
I mean, they dressed six, they played six, but later on in the game he did that. He sat Jordy Benn and just rotated. So Russell played with Klingberg and Demers, and I just don't see that working long term.
The playoffs.
Yes, definitely. But the Stars have issues right now. Defense is part of it. Goaltending is part of it, and also the puck luck that they had the first 20 games of the season is just gone.
Are you worried about the Stars right now, Matt?
I am a little bit worried. Yeah. I mean, obviously they're going to make the playoffs. It's conceivable if they don't snap out of it soon that they could slide down into a wild card slot, but, they will make the playoffs. I think the concern right now is, will they make it out of the first round? And, frankly, the way they're playing right now, I would say no. Whether their first round opponent is Chicago, St. Louis, LA, I don't think they would get past any of those teams.
Especially after what Chicago did. I mean, we just had David Tews from the Hockey Writers on talking about the embarrassment of riches that that Chicago came away with this weekend, and that's going to be a tough team to play. hard to beat that team four times in a week. I'll say that right now.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Chris had barring injuries and so on and so forth. But if everything remains status quo, that's going to be a hard team to beat for anybody.
That's true.
So we got a couple minutes left. Do you have your
I got a quick question.
Go ahead,
Matt. Were you surprised that there weren't more impactful trades leading into the deadline?
You know, I was surprised. In particular, I was surprised that Scotty Hartnell didn't get moved. I really thought that guy, I mean, yeah, I know there's concern about the length of his contract, but he's a 20-goal scorer, 20-plus, year in, year out. And with a good cap hit, too, 4.75 mil. So the fact that he didn't get moved was surprising. Edmonton didn't move Eberle or Nugent Hopkins. But, you know, you and I have discussed that offline. I think maybe Edmonton's waiting for the draft to see where they end up, but we all know it's going to be the first overall pick because of that's course. The rule.
That's what happens. The sun rises, the sun sets, and Edmonton picks first overall. So we know where that's headed. And then, you know,
Texas and Edmonton picks number one.
Yeah. The other player that didn't move, and I think Dallas was in on, and I think overpaying for Russell had a little bit to do with the fact they didn't land Dan Hamhuis out of Vancouver. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of curious because I heard that they made the same offer. They had the same offer on the table to both Calgary and Vancouver. And I guess Calgary flinched first, or maybe I should say pounced first. Why would you not take that offer for a pending UFA defenseman? And then Dallas circled back to Vancouver with a lesser offer after the Russell deal went down, and Vancouver shot that down.
I feel like they I think Vancouver missed the boat on that. I think if that deal was on the table for the Canucks, I don't know why they wouldn't take that.
Yeah, I mean, an NHL defenseman, a top prospect in center Brett Pollock, he was the star second-round pick in 2014.
Still plenty
of And then, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. And then the second-round pick this summer, conditional, you know, if Russell plays, I should say if the Stars make it to the conference final and Russell plays at least 50% of the games in the first two rounds, then it becomes a first round pick.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know why Vancouver wouldn't take that. Well, Matt, we got to go. I'm hitting up against the clock here. Thanks again for coming on, buddy. If we do a first round preview show and the Stars are involved, we'll definitely call you back and get you back on the line again. Thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks a lot for having me, guys.
All right, we'll talk soon, man.
All right, bye-bye.
And we're gone to break. Hello, hockey fans, and thanks for listening to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Make sure you check out all our episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, and HockeyTalkRadio.us, the Internet's first 24-hour-day, 7-day-a-week, all Hockey Talk Radio format streaming station. Check it out. We'll be right back. All right, hockey fans, we're back on the Vegas Hockey Podcast for segment number 4 of our trade deadline recap show, and we're bringing in writers of the teams that were pretty much the busiest or got the most out of the deadline. So we already talked with David for the Blackhawks, and we talked with Matt about the Panthers, and then a little bit about the Stars and their drastic overpayment for Chris Russell. But so now if we include the Luke Shen, Vinny LeCavalier trade, I think the Kings added the most pieces here in the last month or so. So we're bringing back J.D. Stiles, Cali Sports News contributor for the Los Angeles Kings. Jeff, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, Mark? Chris, thank you for having me back.
Of course, of course. One thing, and I'll get started. Let's go back a little bit to the Shen LeCavalier deal. I am more than pleasantly surprised on how much LeCavalier has left in the tank. He might have lost a step, but his stick handling, puck control, and passing are vintage LeCavalier in the 20 or so games he's played with the Kings. Am I missing that, or am I? I think I'm on point with that, JD. What do you think? I think he's the better piece of the deal, that's for sure.
When that deal first happened with LeCavalier and Luke Shen coming down to Los Angeles, I thought the key piece of that trade was actually Luke Shen. I thought LeCavalier was actually just a bonus that was added. Why not let him come to L.A., you know, come to California, fun in the sun, you know, to end his career? Because if you listen to anybody in Philadelphia, the guy's a bum. I mean, he should have retired years ago.
Sure.
Done. He's burnt out. Finished.
That's what I bought into.
Right? Head coach Daryl Sutter, when he talked about LeCavalier in interviews, he always mentions that, in his opinion, the guy's a Hall of Famer. And Daryl Sutter is not the type of guy to add praise to people like that.
No.
So that is a huge compliment to Vincent LeCavalier, and we're seeing that with his play in Los Angeles. You're right, he has lost a step. He's obviously older. The last few years has not been kind. It just did not work out in Philadelphia. He was brought out by his main team, Tampa Bay. But in Los Angeles, he keeps the team with a shot at the cup. Probably his final shot. He's not the main guy. He can play the third line. He can play the fourth line. He just wants to play, and it gave him a renewed passion, and he showed up when he plays. He still has the skills, the puck handling skills. He still has the instinct, and he also has leadership, Stanley Cup experience, but it just turned out to be a perfect fit for the start of his career.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you know, Luke Shen, in the role that they're asking him to play, is doing just fine. I'm not knocking what Luke Shen's doing on the third pair there. I think he's laying some lumber. He's helping kill some penalties. He's staying, you know, the saying, stay in your lane. Don't get out of your lane. Just do what you do. I think that applies to Luke Shen and what they're asking him to do. So I think that trade is a win for Lombardi for sure. Every time I watch LeCavalier, he does these little veteran tricks with the puck that,
yes.
I'll say he probably has the best puck handling stick skills of anybody on the roster right now. And I drank the Kool-Aid from Philly that he was done. But just watching the way he handles the puck and moves it to his teammates. And he probably has the best backhand puck control, passing and shooting on the Kings now as well, I would say.
Fantastic backhand. But as well, this one has a fantastic attitude.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's rubbing off with his teammates and helping rejuvenate himself. He's not afraid to play the Daryl Sutter defensive style system, five up, five back. He will also back check. And, you know, people make mistakes. You know, sometimes you might lose a guy, but who hasn't? You know, everybody does that. But overall, this is an improved Vincent LeCavalier ready to try and get Stanley Cup again with the LA Kings. It just is the perfect fit. And as far as, like, puck handling skills, man, like, I still remember him in his prime playing for Tampa Bay with St. Louis and Brad Richards. And
oh, for sure.
Like, man, he was lights out speed back then. Doesn't have the speed anymore. But now he's got the experience, and he still has the hockey IQ. and you can see it, and that's why Daryl Sutter trusts him on the quote-unquote third line, if needed, the quote-unquote second line. With Cavalier, I mean, he should have played, he wants to win.
Yeah, let's fast forward a little bit. The swap, and it kind of shocked me that the Blackhawks and Kings would actually trade as partners. Knowing the Kings were in the market for a stay-at-home defenseman to, bring in Scuderi. That was a great scene when he came back, by the way. And then to give Chicago the puck mover and get the puck up style defenseman. It struck me as odd that those two would be trading partners to begin with. But
yeah.
I'm just kind of hoping out of Scuderi, if there's 10 to 12 minutes and a couple minutes on the penalty kill left, Ehrhoff never fit the Kings system, and he may in fact fit better in Chicago than Scuderi did because of the systems the two teams play. What do you think of that trade?
Well, the trade caught me off guard, too. Rob Scuderi, I love Scuds. He's a Scudinator. You know, Scudinator 2, Judgment Day, that's him.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole kingdom, of course, is grateful for when he last played with the Kings and taking one for the team in the face in the Stanley Cup final game 6 when he got boarded. But, you know, he's obviously lost quite a few steps since then. Didn't do very well with Pittsburgh, of course, to play a way different style than, you know, what the Kings do. Couldn't cut it with Chicago. He got sent down to the American Hockey League. It looked like the end. And when you're the type of player like Rob Scuderi, that stay-at-home defenseman, you know, physical style, as you get older, and I believe he's now 38, you do tend to break down. I mean, you just can't maintain that physical style. And it really looks like Rob Scuderi was done. But so it really caught me off guard when they did this trade. Now, on the other hand, as you were saying, Christian Ehrhoff did not fit right with the LA Kings. He could not get comfortable or adjust to the system, to his teammates. From certain sources that I rely and I trust are telling me that even when he was put in the locker room, he wasn't really giving it his 100% to adapt to the system. So even when he got sent down to the Ontario Reign, he wasn't even a good fit with the Reign or the coach Mike Stutter. So it was just a wrong fit. It was like, you know, a circle and a square peg. It just did not work out. But I never, ever would have guessed Chicago and LA doing business together. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall or in on that phone conversation or whatever it was. So, like, how did they start the conversation? Hey, you know, Stan, you know.
Who? I want to know who called who.
Yeah, I know who called who. I mean, that's like, who jumped first and made the call? And it's like, you know, Stan, Dean Lombardi here. I know it's a great possibility we can face each other in the conference final again, and it'll be a stressful war of our way. But hey, you want to do business?
Yeah.
Let's help each other out.
Crazy. And I will say that I saw the first game that Scuderi played, and he didn't look bad. He looked, he looked like he always did, really. He didn't lose anybody coming down. He had a couple nice plays, pulling the puck out of the corner and getting it behind the net to the other defenseman. I thought he looked okay.
Yeah, no, he looked fine. For this to work, of course, it's like you were saying, he's going to have to play real minutes. He's going to have to be a part of the third pairing, which kind of makes me scratch my head today because during practice with the Kings at the Calgary Sports Center, Scuderi was partnered with Drew Doughty.
Interesting.
Doughty, of course, you know, averages about 30 minutes a game. This is a Norris Trophy candidate.
Sure.
And just for like 13 Canada this year, Scuderi can't play even 20 minutes, let alone, you know, anything more than that. I don't even know if he can play 15. But if they can keep it down to the 12, 13 minute mark, he's somebody that Daryl Sutter can trust, that the teammates can trust, and they know what to expect from him, and he knows what to expect from the team. He knows the system. And he's very comfortable in LA. And he also is a great presence in the locker room and provides that old school leadership. And I'm talking old school as if now the 2012 Stanley Cup Championship is now old school.
Right.
And it's just something we now with Justin Williams and Mike Richie from Washington, Willie Mitchell over in Florida, Matt Green injured, et cetera, Jared Stoll's gone. They still need that leadership and he's a positive influence. They all like him, they all trust him. If they keep the minutes down, this could work.
Right, right. Now, you did mention practice today. I was wondering, I guess the big ad for the Kings now is Chris Versteeg. And who is he skating with, and where do you see him fitting in? We've got about 4 minutes left, so have at it.
Okay, so right now, Dale Sutter has put him on a line with Jeff Carter and the Red Hot Tanner Pearson. So the quote-unquote second line. That's what they're testing him out with right now.
Okay. So Toffoli's up with Kopitar.
Yeah, Toffoli, Kopitar, and Lucic are the top line. So Dustin Brown is now back on the left on the third line with Le Cavalier and Trevor Lewis.
Now, they've skated together a little bit, that line right there, and I kind of liked it. That was not a bad line.
Yeah, but, you know, and it's the way Dale Sutter plays things, you know, he likes to put the lines through with Wendler. So, and tomorrow's sure. Game day, they're in Montreal at the Staples Center. When they have morning practice tomorrow, the lines could be changed again. So, what if an off day and not a game day? Dale Sutter likes to experiment. He'll experiment during the game, so we all know how he is. But I expect Bruce to be going up and down the roster until they find a fit. But right now, you know what, he's just added depth while Marion Gaborik is out injured. Hopefully, he can just add a few goals here and there so the Kings don't fully lose his depth.
Now, let me bring Chris in. He's kind of been out of it for the whole segment. I know he had a couple things he wanted to go through. Chris, jump on in.
Yeah, I just got one question. JB, were you surprised? And I think Bruce was a good add, a good support player. Were you surprised with the Kings, especially how they've had an all-in mentality for the season, didn't make a bigger move on deadline day?
You know what, to be honest, I am not personally surprised. I've been saying it for some time now, whether it's for Cali Sports News or on Twitter, that I didn't expect them to make a bigger splash than they did when they traded for Le Cavalier and Le Chen. There was always, you know, they wanted them to add another defenseman. They ended up with Rob Scuderi, but I know they tried to make a push for Andrew Ladd, but it seems like the plan was for him to go to Chicago for a while now, so that was out of the picture. And then, Lombardi was looking to make a splash with Edmonton. I'm happy that didn't work out, because I wasn't liking that good too much. But besides that, I don't think he was able to really make it, like, who was out there really to move? You know, besides Andrew Ladd, Eric Staal, possibly, I don't even know if they have pops, but, so he ended up with Chris Bush-Speed, and you know what, I thought it did very well. I thought the Kings and Lombardi did add some solid moves. Of course, they didn't make the splash that the Chicago Blackhawks did, nor did the Kings make the splash that we did in 2014 with Gaborik or Jeff Carter in 2012. But I do like the moves. It does strengthen the team. It does make them more solid, and then hopefully with the return of Marion Gaborik at the playoffs, the Kings can actually solidify the lines and then make a strong push for the Stanley Cup. But of course, that won't be easy because Chicago is all in to win, as is Washington, as is Anaheim, and as is the Kings. It's going to be very interesting. But I'm not that sure.
Yeah, the Western Conference is going to be just brutal.
It's going to be insane and extremely stressful. Prepare, listeners.
Yeah, no kidding. So let me put you on the spot. We got about a minute and a half to go. Did they do enough to get past Chicago? Because I just said a couple minutes back with David, I think that what they did kind of got to make them the favorites in the Western Conference. I will say one thing. If you combine the three players in Ladd, Fleischman, and Weiss of their playoff scoring, in 120-something games, they have scored almost as much as Christopher Stieg has in 70-something playoff games. So
yeah.
If there's one thing we can hang our hats on, it's that.
Yeah. Did the Kings do enough? I don't think anybody did enough. I think Chicago did enough. Chicago's going to be the team to beat.
Okay, well, we're running up against the break, JD. When we get here towards the playoffs, we're going to do some previews of the first, second round matchups, and we'll get back in touch with you, have you on, do some preview work with us. We appreciate your input as always. You guys can find JD at JD_Styles on Twitter, and he links all his content to Cali Sports News, where he's the Kings contributor there. JD, thanks again, buddy. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care, guys.
All right. And Chris, we're right 10 seconds up. Thanks again. We're going to put it in the can, and we're gone.